why she wore a ring of remembrance in their image. Those crabs lived an extraordinarily difficult life and had to fight for their very existence in a world that didn't care whether they lived or died, unless they died and were served en croquette with tartar sauce. Yet they were all beautiful individuals, like her family. And yes, that included her sister and her nephew. That also included these ludicrous people traveling in company with the Chosen One. Perhaps, Grin amused, she had spent a bit too long enjoying the luxuries she'd earned, basking in the comforts of wealth and shrugging off the sting of exile from the capital. She'd played the chess master for a while, but now it was time to get back on the board herself. The goat's arrival was a clear sign that it was time to work again on behalf of everyone who was playing a game rigged against them. Grinda backed away from the hole and climbed to the very top along the beam, stretching herself out but making sure her wand and ring were tightly curled against her and safe. She glared at the thatched tortoises in a warning. She was not to be disturbed. Might as well catch some sleep and recover what strength she could. The soldiers were probably going to stay until dawn at least, so there was little chance the others would return until then. If they returned at all. With some surprise, Grinda realized that she hoped they would. 23. Athwart a corpse and quaking with unaccountable mirth. Being part rabbit was terribly useful when one had to leap through a window and run away in a zigzaggy fashion. Argabella's brain went from normal, anxious human thoughts to a sort of hyperactive whirl of instincts, driving her to safety while also reminding her that she should eat more carrots. The end result was that instead of being cut in half like a grapefruit, her bits all pink and juicy and leaking out, she went right into rabbit mode and returned to conscious thought sometime later, her instincts having delivered her alive and well to a boggy sort of place, quickly turning into a stenchful swamp. At least she hadn't gone full Gustav and dropped a load of pellets as she bolted. Or had that been Gustav that rammed into a soldier outside the inn and gave her room enough to zoom past? She couldn't rightly remember.
Where are we now?
She muttered, hands on her hips as she looked around. Behind her, in the direction of the braided beard, she could still hear the thunk of metal and the slick swish of swords meeting flesh. Quite bloodful back there. But before her was a super bogful. Mud and algae and potential bacterial infections all vied for her attention. A little stream wobbled out into the darkness, moonlight gleaming wanly on its surface. On the left side, boulders rolled up comfortably against a rock wall that was unclimbable for anyone of rabbitesque physique.
"Too cold for alligators and crocodiles," she murmured to herself. "Never too cold for snapping turtles. Rather a lot of frogs, but as Fia's not around, that shouldn't be an issue."
At the thought of Fia, Argabella spun suddenly to look back at the melee she'd left behind. Fia had sent her on, certain that they would be reunited. Grinda had promised they would meet again later, and later probably meant when soldiers stopped killing people, willy-nilly. Later was certainly not now. Even if Argabella had wanted to return to the braided beard, her nervous system wouldn't allow it, because, wow, was her system ever nervous just now. Her ears twitched back and forth, searching for noises that might indicate friend or foe, but mostly she just heard the soft swirl of water nearby and the pleasant plop as slimy things flopped around in said water. Every now and then the scrape and clank of metal suggested that the soldiers might be fanning out in her direction, hunting for yet more potential victims.
Better forward than backward, I suppose.
As she stepped gingerly into the quaggy mud, Argabella decided to keep close to the boulders on the left. That way, should something toothful decide it could use a little appetizer of bunny hocks, she could attempt to scramble upward and perhaps pelt it with rocks from above. The swamp felt a bit too endless and flat in the other direction, and she was certain she'd soon be lost. Rabbits were not swamp things. Rocks firmly on the left, she spread the cattails with her hands and bravely squelched forward. Since becoming a rabbit, Argabella had given some thought to the new instincts and thoughts that overlay her old consciousness like a soft blanket. She still liked most of the same things, except meat and cats, but she was also more easily frightened.
and yet Fia didn't frighten her at all. Not in the fear way. More in the, if you don't look at me, I'll die way. Fia, who could cleave a halfling and half like cutting butter. Fia, who sent Argabella out the window and remained inside to fight without a second thought. Fia, of the too small bikini, and mighty thews, and soft lips, and... Well, it was time for Argabella to acknowledge that perhaps she now shared some of that famed Lapine passion. She had to get back, which meant she had to stay safe. But she didn't actually have to keep going, did she? It wasn't as if her only choices were plow through swamp or sit down and wait for death. She could just clamber up behind some of these boulders and hide for a while. The soldiers most likely wouldn't wade into the water and poke about. Of course, she didn't need to gamble dangerously around the rocks the way Gustav the goat would, either.
"Silly rabbit, such acrobatic tricks of kids,"
she thought, finding a foothold among the rocks, scrambling up, and carefully hefting herself over a large boulder. Argabella expected her foot to land on rock on the other side, possibly of the wet and slimy sort. She'd given some thought to the fact that she might encounter dirt, mud, water, or a rogue axolotl, but what she did not expect to feel under her furry toes was something soft and clammy and firm. A person. She immediately backed off, perching on the boulder in case this person too possessed a sword.
"Oh gosh, sorry!"
The person, for surely it was a person, she knew that much, did not respond.
"Hello?"
Still nothing. Her nose wiggled, but she could only smell swamp. Her ears twitched, but there was no sound other than the wind rushing through cattails. Definitely no sounds of a person shouting at her or threatening her. Although far off, she detected the splash of a boot landing in mud. Still, that wasn't nearly as important as the person in front of her, who'd found the hiding place first and was definitely winning in the realm of silence and stillness. They had to be a champion at hide-and-go-seek.
"Didn't mean to intrude,"
she said, but she was now becoming aware that bodies generally objected to being trod upon by rabbit people. They most certainly didn't just lie there, stiller than still, being strangely clammy, even when playing hide-and-go-seek.
"I don't mean to be rude, but you're dead, aren't you?"
The body neither confirmed nor denied this question. It merely lay there, as bodies tended to do when no longer animated. In the low light, Argabella couldn't tell much about it other than that it seemed quite fresh, and not cut in half or riddled with necrobees. It was head down, and she trod upon its back in a shadow behind a black rock. Its hair and cloak were also black, which didn't help.
"I'm going to turn you over now, so please don't be a zombie,"
she said. Clutching its black-clad shoulder with her hand, she gently pried the body up and discovered the last possible thing she'd expected, which was Poltro, the rogue. Poltro, for all her faults, had never been dead before. And Argabella had never seen Poltro be dead before either, so it was very awkward for both of them. The only thing that seemed right was for Argabella to scream, so she did that. In her befuddled state, she was almost sure she imagined Lord Toby's voice muttering, "Honestly, it was bound to happen sooner or later, so shut up." Argabella ignored her imagination and focused on the present. This was her friend Poltro, and Poltro was deadful. And if Argabella hadn't run exactly this way and chosen exactly this boulder to hide behind, she never would have known what had happened to Poltro. But still, dead bodies tended to make one screamful, and that was exactly how Argabella felt for a long, horrifying while. Then her scream fell off to sobs. Her sobs turned into coughs, her coughs turned into very choppy giggles, and then she was quaking with mirth, one hand over her mouth, trying not to burst out laughing.
"Madam, are you in travails?"
a deep, manly voice asked. Argabella looked up, cheeks puffed out with unspent laughter, to find the dark brown-skinned man from the inn staring at her. Even in the low light, his soulful eyes gleamed with kindness and understanding, and he had his hands out as if to calm her rather than reaching for his sword. He was almost like a masculine version of Fia, possessing the same fine cheekbones and lush lips, the same volume of muscles, and the same lack of proper costuming. He wore only a metal loincloth and a scrap of leather tied around his head.
almost nudeful. Argabella's eyes shot back up, and she swallowed down her laughter and cleared her throat.
"Well, it's just that I've stumbled across a corpse," she said.
The giggle that followed her words might have been a hiccup. The man's eyes looked soulful and sad, like a particularly emotive pit bull.
"Aye, 'tis a grave day at the Braided Beard. Locker's men are as unkind and vicious as their master, and many lives were lost this eventide. I followed your scream, assuming one of yon varlets had cornered a lady."
His eyes softened and shone, his mouth curling into a smile as he held out a hand as if to help her down.
"Let me take you from here, rescue you from the dark deeds spreading in this land. I am a prince in the east, searching for adventure and a wife. They call me Conan. What's your name?"
Argabella's whiskers twitched. She didn't take his hand.
"My name is Argabella, and I'm taken."
"As am I. With your beauty and sang-froid in facing so horrid a scene. But why did you laugh?"
Argabella stood her ground and shrugged.
"She was my friend, the corpse. I mean, I don't know how she got here, although evidence suggests she fell off the cliff, but that's the thing."
Another hiccupy giggle found liberation.
"My friend was a rogue, and this is literally the first time she ever successfully snuck up on anyone. Ever! The irony is... Go, Bill!"
Doubling over, she cackled, her mad guffaws echoing over the swamp. Conan reached for her, his eyes nearly incandescent with concern.
"My Lady Argabella, are you well? Methinks you're in shock."
Argabella stopped laughing, cleared her throat, crossed her arms, and looked down, stepping out of Conan's reach.
"I'm not in shock. This is just my life now. And if you'd like to be useful, you can escort me back to the Braided Beard, so long as you think the fighting is over."
"If it is not, I will fight for you. I'd die for you."
"Whoa-ho-ho-ho! Slow down your speedy horse there. You just met me."
"True, but some moments arrive with such clarity that their significance is plain."
"All right, I'm happy for your clarity, but I'm not seeing things that clearly, so give me some time and space, all right?"
"Of course,"
Conan replied, smooth as polished marble. Argabella wasn't sure what to do about Poltro, though. She was fairly certain some etiquette book somewhere had something to say about leaving dead friends behind to rot in swamps, and that something was probably don't. But she couldn't ask this stranger to carry a corpse for her, could she? She looked down at Poltro and let her gaze follow the rock wall up to the cliff where her friend must have suffered a nasty fall, probably while being chased by a chicken or something that vaguely resembled one. It was a very Poltro-ish way to die. Something at the top of the cliff seemed to glow ever so gently. Two words floated along in her imagination, sounding very much like Lord Toby.
"Don't bother."
But she had to bother. If Fia thought Worsley could be revived, then surely the same spell could help Poltro.
"How strong are you?"
she asked Conan. He grinned.
"I can carry a boulder."
"What about stuff behind boulders?"
Soon she was following Conan's exposed buttocks out of the swamp, through the forest, and back toward the warm lights of the Braided Beard. Poltro flopped over his shoulder, very much like a corpse, because she was one, but he didn't seem to mind. He told Argabella that in his lands it was no big deal to carry a corpse around, and Argabella realized she had a lot of questions for Fia about where she'd come from. The route seemed longer than it had been under the influence of Bunny Brain, when she'd been sprinting to safety, and Argabella spent her time playing around with various healing songs that might work for Poltro. Unfortunately, she couldn't think of any useful words that rhymed with corpse, carcass or cadaver. She did manage to work hen and fen into a chorus that also rhymed "you won't get any older" with "because you hit the boulder." None of her tunes did Poltro any good, though. As they'd learned with Lord Toby, and as she wished she could help Fia understand, magic was magic, but dead was dead. Unless maybe a necromancer got involved, and from what Argabella understood, nobody wanted that, especially not if it was Steve. Still, she held on to hope. There was always hope. It was dawn when they finally saw the braided beard. Although all the soldiers seemed to be gone from the area of the inn, aside from the dead ones being looted by enterprising rogues with better skills than Poltro, Argabella could tell that the fight was over. Living dwarves were everywhere, showing their usual enterprise by tidying things and removing the separate halves of their friends. They all seemed a little forlorn, whether because they were grieving or because everything was filthy now and nothing smelled like lavender, Argabella couldn't guess. The two elves she'd noticed earlier sauntered back in through the front door, their clothes miraculously bloodless and their hair suspiciously spotless, muttering about cold soup and whether one was expected to tip when one's meal had been interrupted by a bunch of state-sanctioned axe murderers. Conan went inside first, but then again, in this short time, she'd learned that Conan went everywhere first just to make sure it was safe. Argabella wanted to argue that if the whiny elves were going in, it had to be safe. But she just let him do his thing, his eyes darting to every corner as if looking for hidden assassins. Argabella didn't care about assassins. She just wanted to find Fia and the rest of her party, too, especially the witches and their magic wands. Unfortunately, it appeared that she was the first one back. Conan looked like he was going to start being annoyingly chivalrous, so Argabella chose a table that had already been wiped off and sprayed with bleach. She could barely see the bloodstains, and the hatchet marks only served to give everything a rustic feel. She sat down, and Conan carefully placed Poltro on a bench, crossing her arms over her chest. Or trying to. Just like when she'd been alive, Poltro's arms flopped everywhere.
"Shall I dig a grave?"
Conan asked, his tone grave. Argabella was trying to flag down a waitress and didn't look to see if his eyes were wobbling with unshed tears.
"Not yet. There's this witch. Maybe she can do something."
Conan tried to look sympathetic, but it was clear he thought nothing further could be done for Poltro. When the waitress appeared, Argabella requested 2 cups of tea, and Conan put in his order for half a suckling pig and a tankard of mead.
"Carrying corpses makes a man hungry," he said, rubbing his 9-pack to demonstrate.
"Uh-huh,"
Argabella said, eyes pinned to the door.
"In my land, there is no aphrodisiac like a hirsute woman," he said, casually eyeing the soft fur of her arm.
"Great."
"My friend Steve said..."
But Argabella only squealed in excitement. Someone had just walked through the door. 24. Uncomfortably smushed in a throng of normal goats, forced into bleatful complaint. If there's one thing goats are good at, it's evading capture while loosing droves of slippery pellets and screaming their fool heads off. In this way, Gustav was indeed an exemplary goat. As soon as the fighting broke out in the braided beard, he nimbly leapt onto a bench, catapulted himself off a dwarf's beer belly, ricocheted off a bulbous nose, and sprang out the window with a bleat of victory behind the rabbit woman. He did ram into a soldier and knock him over, but that helped Gustav as much as it helped Argabella, because he had some room to run around in circles and bleat some more. But his thinking brain thought that maybe he shouldn't make any more noise that might draw attention, and he noticed the herd of tightly packed goats milling around in their pen, regular, non-speaking, non-questing goats, and he scrambled through the fence and headbutted his way into the throng. The ground was knobby knee-deep in emergency pellets. Gustav began to understand why others might not value his own contributions.
"Bleat," he said. "I mean, for real. Bleat."
The other goats looked at him in confusion, tongues hanging out and mad eyes jangling every which way.
"Oh yeah, I can't bleat when I'm thinking in words. Bah."
"Bah,"
another goat asked.
"Yes, I clearly said bah. Don't patronize me, Deirdre."
but he had the good sense to say it quite softly, just in case any of the soldiers could hear a whispering goat among the other 50 screaming goats and the 30 people loudly dying on the ground around the inn.
"So this isn't fun,"
he said to another goat, a rather attractive white nanny.
"Bah."
"I know, right? You try to have a nice meal, and there's suddenly soldiers everywhere, like we live in a police state. And they didn't politely ask us to disperse or read us our rights or anything. They just waded in with swords and started stabbing people. And don't think I didn't notice that they went for my friend Fia first. They obviously have something against vegetarians who protect goats like us. This happened a lot around here?" "That's fascinating, Cynthia. What a unique perspective."
He wiggled around a bit until he was facing a different goat, this one a lovely tawny brown that reminded him of a delicious belt he'd once eaten.
"How about you? Any thoughts on the rise of fascism?"
Gustav nodded thoughtfully.
"Excellent point, Meredith. It's all about the shadowy plots of halflings who've infiltrated the postal system to cause chaos in the kingdom. If you want to destabilize a country, everyone knows all you have to do is mess with their water supply or their mail."
Heaving a deep sigh, he squeezed through the crowd, hunting for some sign of intelligence in the fellows of his species. He found none. He tried to remember what it was like just being a goat, but everything in his memory went sort of muddy, like looking into a fast-flowing stream. He'd always enjoyed leather and pooping, but honestly, who didn't? It was a lifestyle unto itself. Yet when he tried to think back to the first spark of genius, his first intelligent thought, all that came to mind was staring at Worsley's sodden boots and thinking,
"Man, I want to eat that and excrete that. The old 1-2, the number 2 following some hours later."
On the upside, no one had threatened to kill him in at least 20 minutes, and outside the fence, no such deal had been struck. But staying inside the fence, as he'd done most of his life, meant he'd just be killed at a later date for a hearty supper served with soda bread and a refreshing tankard of ale. Self-awareness had its downside, for he had lost the bliss of ignorance. Butting his way around the throng, he muttered,
"Excuse me. Pardon me. Hey, hey, pretty mama, how you doing? Your friend seems like she's into me. Uh-oh, that's not Nutter."
The billy goat in question nudged the nannies apart to step closer to Gustav. The herd had been tightly packed, but now it spread a little, the nanny goats softly bleating to one another as if whispering, "Fight, fight, fight." As for the billy, he was a beastly specimen, probably one of those more expensive goats that looked very fine up until the day they went in the stew pot and their horns appeared on some feisty warrior's helmet. He was filthy white, his eyes a lurid gold, but all goats had lurid gold eyes as far as Gustav knew. Worst of all, the billy looked furious.
"Bah!"
he growled, and Gustav noted the extra "ah" for emphasis.
"Who, me?"
he said, stepping backward and finding his path blocked by yet more goats.
"Look, I was just passing through and making conversation. Have you met Deirdre and Cynthia and Meredith? I have so much respect for..."
The billy lowered his not inconsiderable horns.
"Okay, now let's be reasonable. You're maybe 3 times my size, and your horns have got to be hormonally enhanced. Nobody gets muscles like that from standing around in a pen. Let's talk this out, bro. I'm not threatening your herd or leadership abilities, which, by the way, great job at spending your entire life inside this tiny fence without going insane. I'm just looking for an exit here. There's no need to..."
The billy reared back a little and Gustav's goat brain took over. Screaming a bleat of his own, he lowered his head and ran for the billy. But instead of crashing his skull against the other goat's skull, he veered around him, picked up speed, and bounded into the air. Hopping off a stump, he sprang right over the fence and into another pen, landing in thick, cold mud. The mud sucked at his hooves as he struggled toward firmer ground. Enraged bleating from the other pen suggested that the billy was still looking for a fight when no one was interested, a condition he'd noticed many dudes often suffered. The wooden boards creaked dangerously as the goat rammed his substantial horns against the fence.
Like that's gonna work,
Gustav muttered, heroically clambering out of the muck.
Just like a goat, bashing your head against whatever gets in your way. Hey, Billy, you don't have to be what they tell you to be.
Gustav immediately realized his error as a soldier outside called,
Oi, Peter, did you hear something from the goat pen?
Marr,
Gustav muttered out the side of his mouth.
Dicks.
As the soldiers approached the fence, the Billy was kind enough to transfer his rage to them, ramming the post nearest the new interlopers with his horns.
Balmy little nutter,
one soldier said.
Right,
Gustav muttered.
Did you say something?
The other soldier said. Gustav finally hit higher ground and swore he would be better about pretending to fit in around the farmyard, at least so long as there were stupid people standing about with swords. Navigating a huge pile of moldy hay, he ran afoul of a bloated pig splayed out pornographically in the mud.
Oh, gross,
he muttered.
What? And you're a prince?
Gustav had to do a double take. The sow's eyes were closed, her belly and bits exposed to the moonlight.
Did you just talk?
He whispered.
An idiot says what?
She whispered back.
What?
That's what I thought.
Carefully traversing the mud that he now recognized as being at least half-pig excrement, he maneuvered his way around to behold the sow's enormous jowly face. Her eyes blinked open, looking annoyed and yet also like tiny raisins in a very large pudding.
It's rude to stare,
she said.
Yeah, well, you take up most of my vision field, so it's kind of hard not to.
You smell like goat.
There's a really good reason for that.
Why are you in my pen?
Why are you talking?
The sow grunted and wiggled, rolling this way and that until she was able to gain her feet. She had to weigh as much as 50 Gustavs and had a solid, if pungent, sort of power about her.
I'm Gustav.
I'm a pig.
Okay, but what's your name?
The sow shrugged and waddled to a vat of slop. She daintily nibbled at an apple core before addressing him.
Look, son, pigs don't have names. They call me things like piggy and bacon and porker and suey, but that's more like calling you curry or glue.
Who enchanted you?
The sow huffed a laugh.
Nobody. All pigs can talk. We're one of the 5 most intelligent animal species in the world. And that means we're smart enough not to let the humans know our little secret. Unlike you, who almost blew it out there.
As she snorted around in her trough, Gustav struggled with this concept.
So, let me get this straight. You're smart. You can talk. Your entire species can, but you're all content to sit in this pen or that, wallowing in your own filth and wait for the day they come for you with an axe?
The sow swallowed something and turned to face him. He was startled by the intelligence in her eyes and the anger.
What are we gonna do then, huh? Take over the world? Do I look like I can heft a sword or load a boulder into a catapult? This way, they do all the work and we live lives of leisure. I like to think of them as a team of really incompetent butlers.
But you get that they're going to kill you and eat you one day, right?
The sow shrugged massive shoulders that would one day be slow roasted and pulled apart into delicious sandwiches served with a side of slaw.
Us and the cows and the sheep and the goats, the ducks and the geese and the chickens, too. That's what usually happens.
And you're not even going to run away or fight back?
She loomed over him now, the bristles standing out around her head.
Oh, sure. I'm quite handy in a sprint. I run marathons in my spare time. Then you see the 26.2 tattooed on my arse? Don't be foolish. Things are what they are. They have thumbs and weapons, and we don't.
Every pig knows from suckling that one day will be nothing more than an invigorated ham jam on some pompous lordling's artisanal crackers.
Gustav stammered for a moment before blurting,
"Man, that's insane."
The sow laboriously turned her back on him and flopped back into the mud.
"That's life in the pig pen, kid. Hedonism and mud packs and bird song in the mornings until they knock you out and you go to hog heaven."
Gustav looked at her broad back, then at the pen of goats, then back to the sow. It was one thing to accept offense when you had no proper sense of what it meant, but the sow's suicidal worldview was incomprehensible.
"What if you just ate a little less, got some exercise, built up your muscles, and masterminded your own escape?"
"Too much work."
At that moment, Gustav realized that intelligence was only one part of the equation, and the rest was predicated on rebellion, hard work, and tenacity. He also realized that no matter how intelligent the pig claimed to be, she was an utter moron.
"What's on the other side of your pen?" he asked.
"Chickens, and a milch cow, and a magical boot, and sheep."
"Wait, a magical boot?"
"Did I stutter?"
"What's it do?"
The sow leaned her head back to look at him, her ears flopping over.
"How should I know? I can't get over there."
"Then how do you know it's magical?"
"Well, it's got a golden sparkly sort of aura around it."
"Would you mind if I wandered over there to check it out?"
The sow flopped back down on her side and closed her eyes.
"I rather hope you will. Get lost and take your judgment with you."
Gustav was more than glad to squeeze into the next pen. He did not say goodbye. He had decided that he did not like pigs. This realization was cemented when he heard her muttering,
"I thought regular goats were bad, but jeez, what a jerk."
None of the chickens sought conversation, and neither did the milch cow. Only when he was two fences over did he turn around and shout,
"You're a prisoner of your own choices!"
at the pig.
"And for all your self-righteous blather, your gamey flesh will still be slurped up in a broth of carrots and potatoes someday."
The cow lowed.
"Right?"
Gustav said.
"She was about as pleasant as a peck of hot chili peppers setting my arse on fire on the way out. I don't recommend hot chili peppers, by the way. Just a friendly grazing tip."
The cow appeared more interested in chewing her cud than in anything he had to say, however, so he turned his attention to the next pen. The sow had not lied to him about this, at least. There sat a perfectly normal stump, and on that stump sat a perfectly abnormal boot. It was as if a sunbeam had pierced the night to shine like a spotlight, and little glints of gold gently floated through the glow as if they just escaped the morning wood and left a magical stain behind. The boot itself was a cobbler's masterpiece to a goat's eyes. Old, seasoned leather, cracked and greasy with age, the tongue poking out like a welcome mat, and the laces delectably slurpable.
"What's the magic boot do?"
he yelled into the night.
"If it makes you shut up, that's magic enough for me."
He was really coming to hate that pig. Gingerly, he nudged the boot with his nose, and nothing happened. More aggressively, he butted the boot with his horns, and it toppled off the stump, taking the beam of golden light with it. Even lying on its side, a ragged sock half slithering out, it looked like Gustav's fondest daydream. With a frisson of joy, he gave it a lick, and his eyes rolled back in his head.
"This is it," he whispered to the night. "The boot, capital B, the paragon of boots, peerless in Pell. Everything I ever wanted in a piece of footwear, aged to perfection, slick with wear, redolent of foot sweat."
He nibbled a lace, bit off the tip, and swallowed it, moaning with pleasure.
"Did you need some privacy?"
the pig called.
"Don't listen to her,"
he murmured to the boot. She doesn't understand what we have. It's just you and me, baby.
Bit by delicious bit, he ate the boot. The tongue was a revelation. The laces were dreamy, and the actual leather was so good that he had to force himself to slow down and taste each bite. Time seemed to stop as Gustav consumed the boot of his dreams. As he chewed the last chunk of sole, the sunbeam gently faded away, and then he was just another goat in the darkness. The night seemed still all of a sudden, the fighting over and the soldiers gone, or at least drinking more quietly in the inn. The normal goats bleated. The pig muttered about predestination. The cow mooed, and Gustav hovered, for once, on the edge of fullness. For at least a solid minute, he didn't think about eating anything, and that was a sort of magic in itself. As he swallowed the very last bite, he thought,
I wish I was anything but a goat, except a pig. Neither of those things, please.
Gulp. The boot was gone. The stump was just a stump. The magic had disappeared. But something rumbled in his tummy, and he looked down to find a faint golden glow suffusing his midsection.
What's this all about?
He asked, giggling a little. And then the magic glow winked out, and he was still a goat. But at least he wasn't a pig.
I am so done with animals, he said, which he realized meant he was going to be pretty lonely from now on.
When Staff had been talking to Worstly, she'd said something about him being cursed as much as blessed by this aura of the Chosen One, probably because of the one part. There was no one else who could understand how isolated he felt, for he was not truly part of the herd anymore, nor was he accepted as an equal among the bipeds. Squeezing through the next fence, Gustav emerged in a clearing beyond the inn. He'd managed to clamber over or through all the animal pens, and dawn was just beginning to break. It had been a long night, and he was feeling the effects of flight, fight, intellectual debate, painful epiphany, and unrepentant gluttony. He realized that in all his years on Worsley's farm, he'd never noticed a sunrise, never paid attention to the gentle aroma of blood and metal bedazzled with dew. His life had once been as simple as that of the goats, still huddled in their pen, bleeding stupidly and pooping on one another's hooves. It was, he thought, quite a different world outside the fence. The sun rose pink in the east, and a rooster crowed, breaking the tender silence of the sleepy world.
Or a rooster, Gustav said to his belly. I don't want to be a rooster either. Everybody hates a rooster.
Leaping onto the stump that the inn used for chopping firewood, he surveyed the yard for trouble. No soldiers could be seen, and the only humans still able to exert themselves were looting the bodies of their less exertible colleagues. There was no sign of Gustav's party, but then again, they'd been inside the inn recovering their strength with food as he had. He leapt down from the stump and stopped to sip cool water from a trough outside the pens. It tasted of insouciance and freedom, and he savored it before he trotted toward the front door, ever ready for some clumsy lout to threaten him with axes, swords, or threats of future curry. Fortunately, no one attempted to goat-handle him, and Gustav clattered into the inn anxious to get the heck back out again, but with company. The first thing he saw was Argabella, mainly because she was staring directly at the door, her face showing clearly that he was not what she'd been expecting. Her whiskers and ears drooped.
Oh, Gustav.
Glad to see you too, Argie.
It's not that I'm disappointed to see you, it's just that...
You were waiting for someone else.
The bunny blushed through her fur.
I'm just glad you're okay. Did you happen to see Fia outside?
Gustav scrambled up onto the bench across from her and nodded at the tall man sitting next to Argabella.
Did you ask her brother?
Argabella shook her head and frowned.
That's Conan. It's a long story. Although, Poltro...
Let me guess. Outside fighting chickens.
The opposite.
Inside and loving chickens?
Tears filled Argabella's eyes, and she held up a human hand from under the table that looked even to Gustav's eye rather too bluish and clammy.
I don't know. I found her in the swamp, already dead. I think she fell off a cliff.
She chickened out, eh?
Gustav,
Well, she did want to eat me,
he huffed indignantly. Before Argabella could lecture him, his lecture sense was tingling. Something fell from the ceiling with a clatter, slamming onto an empty plate and smashing it to bits. The tall man beside Argabella leapt to his feet, his sword out and held before him menacingly, its tip pointed at the interloper.
Is that a giant rat?
Argabella asked, but not like she was disgusted, because clearly she had no room to talk in the furry and weird area.
It's a possum, Gustav said.
I think you mean an opossum,
the man said from behind his sword. The creature opened its beady eyes and muttered,
Don't even start with that pedantic tribe after the night I've had. Possum splaining a possum.
Gustav sighed and raised an eyebrow.
What is it about this dwarf joint? Everything can talk. Do they make magic kibble? What next? The spoons are gonna start complaining about dental hygiene.
Rising to her legs, the possum stretched and yawned, showing pointy teeth and a long pink tongue.
No, but they do make a pretty poor roof, at least if one wishes to sleep past breakfast. Darling, do you not recognize me? It is I, Grinda the Sandwich.
As if to press the point, she waved a long pink tail in which was clutched Grinda's glass wand, and her sparkly crab ring was looped around the tip.
Oh, Grinda!
Argabella said, hopping up like she wanted to hug the witch, but fairly certain it would be awkward. She settled for waving, which was no less awkward, but felt much safer, considering the possum's teeth and temper.
I'm so glad to see you. Have you seen Fia?
Grinda gestured with a pink paw at the exit.
She fought valiantly through the door last night. That dratted staff got the better of Matilda sadly and turned her back into a marmoset.
And she got you, too?
The possum hissed and Argabella drew back.
No! She did not overpower me, thank you very much. I chose this form to escape her, and now I've forgotten how to change back. But I still have my wand and ring. I merely need to speak to another wizard, or witch, or perhaps get my paws on some grimoires. But never fear. I am in my right mind, and still capable of my previous powers.
She licked her chops.
And I could use some cat food. Or garbage, perhaps. But fancy garbage.
I like you in this form, Gustav said. We have a lot in common.
Grinda was about to say something nasty to him, according to the way her adorable pink nose wrinkled up, but then she stopped and canted her head.
You. Goat. There's something different about you. Have you been poking your nose into the foul domain of the magical arts?
Gustav felt his shoulders go up as he ejected a volley of shame pellets onto the newly cleaned floor.
I ate a boot,
he admitted.
And
it was sort of glowing in a magical kind of way, if you know what I mean.
The possum puffed up, seeming nearly twice her previous size.
Have you learned nothing from this journey? Magic is powerful. You can't just go around eating everything that sparkles.
Gustav cleared his throat and stepped back on the bench.
I'm a goat. That's what I do.
It occurred to him, briefly and uncomfortably, that the pig had said something quite similar to him earlier, and that he was gently dipping a trotter into the realm of hypocrisy. He was now a thinking creature, but he hadn't even considered not eating the boot. Was that because he was a prisoner of his animalistic nature, or was he, as a magical being, merely drawn to magic? Was eating that boot part of his destiny? Would something horrible have happened if he hadn't eaten the boot? Which part of his nature was goat, and which part was becoming all too human? Speaking of human nature, if Poltra was dead, why was her body just sitting on the bench while people ate breakfast? Weren't humans pretty creeped out by death in general? Why would they sit companionably next to a corpse, especially while eating other dead animals with butter, which was itself made from fermented animal milk? Oh, conscious thought was really starting to get his goat. And then his attention was drawn to the door, which had just slammed open and bounced off the wall. There, mighty thews and all, was Fia. 25. In the room where the disposal of a persistent suitor is effected. Fia returned the huge grin Argabella flashed at her when she walked through the door of the braided beard. Her honey bunny was alive, and so was everyone else. Whoops, maybe not Poltro. She didn't look well. And that one guy, her countryman she'd seen briefly before the fighting broke out, was hovering awfully close to Argabella. She didn't see Grinda anywhere, nor Matilda the marmoset. There was, however, a possum on the table with Grinda's glass wand wrapped up in its tail and a sparkly crab winking on the tip of it, and Gustav the goat had managed to avoid being turned into curry, somehow. The jar of pickled herring they'd bought hadn't survived the evening, though. Sad fish eyes stared unblinking among the shattered remnants of a jar sitting in a puddle of brine and onions that everyone was trying to ignore. The bodies and the bloodstains from the fight had been cleaned up, however, and you'd never know that anything amiss had happened, except that everyone looked uncommonly dirty for the braided beard. Fia's entrance was apparently too much for the proprietor, Yolanda Kopkump, who watched her clomp in all muddy and shouted for everyone's attention.
All right, we are mostly back to normal, and we do have standing rules for being served here. We let that slide a little bit while we were disposing of corpses, but it's time to reassert our civilization. Everybody to the baths now!
Fia had no problem with that. Argabella practically leapt out of her seat, leaving Poltro there with the Easterner and the animals, and the two of them ducked into the bathhouse before the rest could catch up. They'd have time to talk later. Argabella hugged her tightly, mud and all, then delicately picked out a piece of bark that had somehow become lodged in her cleavage.
"What's this?"
her bunny asked.
"That's a piece of pup."
Argabella regarded the bark for a moment before turning limpid, worried eyes back to Fia.
"As in your father?"
"No, as in a poplar tree that tried to eat me. It's been quite a night. For both of us, I imagine. We have catching up to do."
"Yes, lots of catching up."
They caught up in copper tubs placed side by side, where Fia learned about the tragic demise of Poltro. Her fate and Toby's, at least, did not weigh on her conscience, though Worstley's still did, and she remained determined to make that right, if she could. Argabella also informed her that the man who'd been sitting so close to her at the table was named Conan, a prince who found hirsute women attractive and had not been subtle in broadcasting his desire for Argabella.
"What a duck dork,"
Fia said. Argabella giggled and then gasped, remembering something.
"Also, I don't know if it's the same one you knew. He said he had a friend named Steve."
Fia gripped the sides of the bathtub and pressed her lips together over a scream of frustration. When she could manage, she said through gritted teeth,
"It has to be. Steve was well connected with princes and such."
"What are we going to do about Conan?"
"Nothing. We are just going to leave and not tell him my name. The last thing I need is for Steve to hear that I'm hanging around Songland these days. He has people in town. This Conan may well be one of them."
"Does Steve want you dead or something?"
"I don't know what he wants. I do know that I like having no contact with him whatsoever. Come on, I want to get out of here. We need to get more pickled herring and do something daring."
They did not, unfortunately, escape the braided beard without confronting Conan. He accosted them near the door while they were waiting for Yolanda to bring them another jar of salty fish.
"My Lady Argabella,"
he said, his dark brown skin newly oiled and scented with cinnamon and cloves, fully aware of how handsome he was.
"May I inquire whither you are bound? I would like to offer my services."
Argabella raised one ear along with an eyebrow.
"What kind of services?"
"Many things. I have a bag of holding, a windwalker's cloak, a torch, and many bonuses to my strengths, provided by various potions and spells. But the main thing I'm known for is offering protection. I am an excellent fighter."
"Is that so?"
Fia asked.
"Then why were you the first one out the window when the soldiers came last night? I fought my way out the door."
Conan scoffed and rolled his eyes at her.
"There was no need to fight. You could have done the same. Instead, you chose to put your life in danger for no good reason.
My sword was thirsty, and the point you're missing is that she already has more than competent protection. She doesn't need you.
Who do you think you are to speak to me like that?
Conan demanded, amusement gone, his brows meeting in the middle as he scowled at Fia.
I'm the woman who will gut you if you don't leave us alone right now,
Fia said, aware that she didn't sound like the peaceful person she wished to be. But this Conan guy, friend of Steve, wasn't taking the hint. Argabella cleared her throat significantly as the two tall people drew closer, staring each other down.
Actually, Conan, you could provide a valuable service to me, for which I would be very grateful.
Both Fia and Conan looked down at the bard and spoke as one.
He can?
And,
I can?
Yes. I need you to take the body of our friend down to the Grange, where you'll find the hut of Belladonna the Healer.
They followed Argabella's furry finger to where she pointed and saw that Poltro was slumped over the table like she was passed out drunk instead of dead.
Why, can she bring your friend back to life?
No, not quite, but our friend's former employer and guardian is buried near there, and we think she should rest beside him. We have urgent business in town, or we would see to it ourselves. Would you do this tremendous favor for me? I will wait each night at Testy Tom's blue orb room so that I can thank you properly. Look for me there.
The bard smiled as winsomely as she could, that furry finger now tracking down his arm, which Fia observed with a flash of hot jealousy. Conan saw Fia's expression, gave a smug grunt of satisfaction, and then leered down at Argabella.
It would be an honor, my lady. It will take me a few days, but I look forward to seeing you at the Blue Ball.
Blue Orb,
Argabella reminded him.
Tom gets testy if you get it wrong.
The Blue Orb Room, right. I will see you soon, my lady. I depart forthwith.
Conan moved to take Argabella's hand to kiss it, but the bard clasped her hands together near her cheeks, beaming up at the prince with a breathy sigh.
Thank you ever so much, Conan. It is such a tremendous gift of your time. We must also depart forthwith, so if you'll excuse us for now, we'll see you soon.
Of course.
He backed up and bowed, and Fia bowed back once Argabella nudged her. Yolanda arrived at that point with their new jar of pickled herring.
Here you are,
she said, extending it to Argabella.
A little something for the road. Do visit us again when you can, dear. We generally offer less death and dismemberment, and here's a coupon for 10% off.
They had no choice but to exit after that, since they had already said they really needed to. They bade farewell to both Yolanda and Conan once more, and walked right out, Fia keeping a tight rein on everything she wanted to say until it was safe to do so. She pulled Argabella to the right once they were outside, and they circled the building, heading back to the rear entrance of the baths. Fia stopped them before a door, figuring it was a safe place to talk.
What was that all about?
Fia asked in an urgent whisper. Argabella shrugged.
I got rid of him. With a ridiculous promise? I can't believe you'd do that. Do what? Make a promise or keep it? Make it wait. What do you mean? I mean, I'm never setting foot in Testy Tom's blue orb room.
Argabella squatted down on her haunches and placed her hands on top of her knees, making herself as small as possible while peering up at Fia, looking very much like a wild hare.
What? Cute little me can't ever tell a lie. Of course not. That's why he believed me. Put down the herring for a second.
Fia complied, and as soon as she stood up, Argabella launched herself into her arms, wrapped her legs around her midsection, and held onto her shoulders. She put her soft forehead against Fia's and said,
I rather thought that was a situation where we didn't have to kill anybody, so I used my tricksy rabbity wiles. Hope I didn't foil your plans.
I had no plans, except to be with you.
You sure? Looked like maybe you were planning to start a fight.
Well,
Fia thought back and recalled clearly that, yes, she really had wanted to fight him.
Maybe just a friendly kick to the groin,
she admitted.
And if he escalated?
I might have been forced to kill him.
Yet here we are, all alive and unstained. Will you try to always make that happen first, before you resort to violence? Just try.
Fia could not even begin to argue. She didn't want to.
I will try.
Thank you. Let's get this done and go grow some leggy roses together.
Yes, let's.
They entered the baths and called to the rest of the party to meet up in the back when they were ready. No need to risk any of them running into Conan and alerting him that they were, in fact, still on the premises.
I think we'll finish this one way or another today, she told Argabella.
Those are the two most common options,
her bunny agreed.
Though sometimes there is yet another way to finish things, or a way we had not even thought of, or this really weird way you'd only consider if you had ingested some dodgy numeric mushrooms first.
There were, Fia supposed, many ways the evening could go, not just one way or another, and she hoped she'd get to experience one of the ways in which she was alive and happy at the end of it.
Let's begin the end, then, Fia said,
and put Argabella down as Grinda and Gustav emerged from the bathhouse in a lavender cloud.
All right, stop stalling now, Gustav said. Y'all said there would be a bunch of nanny goats without any other billies around. Take me there to meet my destiny.
26. Abroad, in a fulsome field of goatly paradise. The nanny goats were not heavy with kid, for which Argabella was profoundly grateful. That was still a couple months away, most likely, as was the act of animal husbandry that would get them there. Grand nannies could be grouchy, but just now, Gustav would be like a slice of pie sitting on the windowsill. When they approached the fencing that surrounded Lurker's estate, a few of the enchanted nanny goats were having a nice scratch against the wooden posts, and they started talking about him, assuming he was the normal sort of goat and wouldn't be able to understand.
Looky what's coming our way, girls. A fine-looking billy on the hoof. Got himself a righteous beard,
one said.
Oh, my. Cut me off a slice of that. Only a slice, girl? Well, I was going to share, but if you're going to make comments about my appetite, I can just keep them all to myself.
Ladies, ladies, there's enough for everybody, Gustav assured them. You can all have a slice of the Gustav.
The nanny goats froze for a few seconds, trying to decide whether to scream or run or faint away. Argabella could sympathize because she'd frozen in exactly the same way many times when addressed by erstwhile suitors.
Am I hearing things, or did that billy just say we could all have a slice?
The first one said.
That's right. I'm a free-range organic talking billy, Gustav replied, tastefully accessorized with a very tall human, an irascible possum, and a singing bunny woman.
Argabella's ears drooped at her description, but apparently she was a point of interest to the other goats.
Where'd you get the singing bunny?
One of the nannies asked.
Up in Boric's, Gustav replied. They're everywhere you go. Head up there and you can have one for free.
I don't know if I even want one yet. What does she sing?
She croons tunes you haven't heard in many moons. Say, what's your name? I'm Gustav.
I'm Beatrix,
the nanny said. She was mostly milk white, except for a single black patch on her back and black tips to her ears.
Shh! Don't disclose your personal info,
another said. She was a salt and pepper gray.
We ought to tell Blurt about this.
Sure, have Blurt come over, Gustav said. Who's Blurt, by the way?
He's our keeper. He gives us little snacks,
Beatrix said.
Kind of like a poo boy?
No, he's not a poo boy. We have so much room on the grounds that we don't need a poo boy. He just jokes around with us and feeds us, gives our coats a nice brush once in a while.
You're living the high life, Beatrix. What are the snacks like? Little rolled up pieces of leather?
No, they're mostly oats and dirt stuck together with some syrup and bugs, I think.
Ah, trail mix then,
Right. So where you headed, Gustav?
Beatrix asked.
Here, actually. I heard in town you nannies were talkers, and I wanted to come over and have a chat. How'd you get the gift of gab, anyway?
Some filthy pixie did it to us. She has only one blue sock.
Hey, me too! Meaning I'm a victim of staff. Not that I have a blue sock. We're on the same team.